Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for September 3rd, 2017, Labor Day weekend for 2017. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, tonight it is the middle of the Labor Day weekend, and didn't get a guest this week, but I think that's okay because there seems to be plenty to talk about, as there always is when Donald Trump's on the political scene. And let's start into something we started talking about last week, but it's kind of had another week to have more events come up on it, and that's Hurricane Harvey and the cleanup and recovery efforts and all that that entails. And obviously, you know, it's such a tragedy and people have been donating. I think they feel that this may be the most damage of any storm economically than any storm in the nation's history, because one, it hit a city of Houston, the fourth largest city in our country. And I had heard that it was actually going to be the third largest if trends continued. And now they think because of this hurricane, it may not pass Chicago, but, you know, that's not important. But that just means a lot of people live there. And I think there's a lot of times people forget that politics, census statistics, all these things about bigness just means that people live there, and people should be the motivation of what you do in almost any facet of life. Catherine, kind of what are some of your thoughts on what's happened basically in the week since the storm hit?
Well, it's just heartbreaking to see these people and the circumstances and just the way the water just kept coming all week. I think it's starting to recede now, but also not just in Houston, but it's, you know, spreading it, you know, because the storm moved, it was in Beaumont and other parts of Texas. So it's just heartbreaking and really kind of shocking. One thing that we've learned over the week is a couple things about Houston. Number one, they have no zoning laws in Houston, which is just kind of shocking for such a large city. And they didn't, because of that, there's not a lot of attention paid to floodplains and water, you know, managing water drainage and all that kind of thing, which is one of the reasons that the flooding is so bad. And I just heard on NPR today that the city proposed, or someone proposed, putting signs up in neighborhoods that would show how high the flooding would go, like over the last 10 years. Like, if we get this, you know, much water, this is how much flooding there'll be. And it was supposed to, you know, sort of show people what they were, you know, getting into. And the realtors and developers pitched a fit, and so they didn't put those signs up because they, you know, were worried about how it would affect real estate sales and things. So I think we hopefully will learn some lessons from this, that yeah, we need to have zoning laws, and we need to think about water drainage when we're building and developing, and especially in large cities where there's these giant swaths of concrete and asphalt that have no drainage associated with them. But in the end, it's just heartbreaking to see all the loss of life and the loss of homes and cars, and it's just tragic.
Yeah, I didn't know that about the zoning laws, that because a lot of times I know people think about zoning means what economically you can put up typically with businesses or not businesses, but there is a lot of city urban planning that goes into that makes sure that you adequately distribute everything and think about, you know, things like rivers and creeks and what have you. Because I guess the Brazos River runs close to the city of Houston. I know it empties out south of Houston there at the ocean. Tim, what are some of your thoughts?
Well, you read everything from the stories of heartbreak to the latest story this morning. A new problem has cropped up. People are pretty much piling things in their front yard. I mean, everything, salvageable stuff, debris and everything. Yes. Well, here comes scavengers through the neighborhoods, picking through the stuff and getting stuff. I really wish that wasn't going on, because right now, of course, the police departments and all are overwhelmed with other matters. The response to Harvey has been okay, though. A lot of money is going to be needed for this thing. We talk politics on here. Congress comes back to town this week. One of the first things they're going to have to do, well, they're going to have to put everything else off and take up an aid package for Houston. And we're talking about north of $100 billion, probably, for starters. In the meantime, this person's going to be wanting that pet project. That person's going to be wanting that pet project. And our president's going to be wanting, you know, his wall or whatever it is he's wanting. But it's going to be interesting to see what Congress does about all of this. You know, there have been those in the past, guys, when we had Hurricane Sandy and some of the others, including some of our friends down in Texas who were complaining that we were giving too much money to things like Hurricane Sandy, too much money to FEMA. And I wonder what those people will say now. It's just going to be interesting to see how all of this shakes out.
One of those people being Ted Cruz.
I'll say. What the thing is, as the response is going to have to be, you know, money-wise, massive. And the only place that kind of money can come from is the federal government. I know there'll be those that'll poo-poo what I just said and say, oh, this person is doing this and that person is doing that. And, you know, the bio-whatever, Cajun-whatever's coming down there and rescuing people and we'll be fine. Well, no. We are, as you mentioned, talking about the fourth largest city in the country and all that goes with it, and there's going to be a massive amount of as a result of this. So,
well, plus a lot of it is very complicated and some of it is toxic and dangerous.
Right.
You just can't have a bunch of volunteers from, I mean, love the volunteers. They've been amazing. It's been amazing hearing these and seeing these stories about people rescuing people. And, you know, there isn't enough gratitude for that. But when it comes to cleanup and, you know, with all the chemicals and the sewage and all, I mean, there's just all kinds of complications that are not for novices. You need professional, experienced people to, you know, take care of those things. And I mean, I think that everybody seems to think that the response from FEMA and the National Guard and the Red Cross and everything has been really good on this. And I don't like to give much credit to the administration, and it probably doesn't really deserve it. But I'm very grateful that that has been the case instead of the sort of sloppiness we saw around Katrina and less so around Sandy. So, kudos to FEMA and, you know, whoever the other agencies that were working on it. Because it seems like, I mean, considering the catastrophic nature of this, there seem to be, you know, there's not as many deaths as I would have expected. I mean, I think there'll be more. I think we can be grateful for that.
Well, it's also a different way to evacuate. New Orleans was just so tricky because it sits on the other side of Lake Pontchartrain, and evacuating that city was incredibly difficult. as opposed
oh,
to
Houston,
which is easier. You got land in more directions, and that you can take that as a praise of the Bush administration or a cop out for the the Trump administration, the Bush administration. But I'm just talking geography, not really trying to put a political side on that. But trying to put a political side on it, you know, Tim, you were talking about what are people going to do and vote for. Ted Cruz voted against Hurricane Sandy relief. He wasn't in the Congress during Hurricane Katrina, so we don't know how he would have voted, but he voted against it for Hurricane Sandy, and people are pointing at that vote because he is a senator from Texas, and, you know, you see, couldn't see any way he could vote against it from Texas. But how many people that are kind of Tea Party ilk from other states, you know, western states that, you know, would like rain, that kind of thing, that believe, oh, we can't spend all this government money, are going to vote against aid and point to Ted Cruz's vote and how much could that hurt him and then just hurt the Republican Party for looking, you know, completely tone deaf. What do you think?
Well, yeah, all that is true. But, you know, these guys need to keep their eye on the ball. In the meantime, like I was reading about Beaumont. I think it's a city of, like, I don't know, 120,000 people. Their water treatment plant went down.
Yeah.
It was flooded by that river, Berry River, you mentioned a minute ago. And they have no water in a city of 120,000 people. That Arkema plant that Catherine mentioned. Been three explosions there in recent days, and that's just right outside of Houston. A lot of bad things can happen when chemicals explode. The people in Texas are beginning to have funerals and bury the dead, you know. The fourth largest city in the country. We talk about the flood waters receding, but yet just yesterday they had to release the overflow in two reservoirs and intentionally flood large swaths of the western part of the city of Houston and order mandatory evacuations, order people out. This is going to be a long, long, long process. And what they need is a Congress that gets on board and starts sending these folks some help to rebuild that devastation. They don't need anybody to score political points right now because you cannot eat political points, drink, turn on a light switch, and get political points for air. Political points do not do these people any good right now. Action, firm action. That's what does some good.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, another point on this, you were talking about the toxic materials. I had heard that a lot of these EPA Superfund sites are starting to flood. I didn't even know about the explosions, but I've heard about the floods. And the EPA is not even on the scene because, of course, in the current administration, the Environmental Protection Agency is just a non-needed entity, at least the way they've been treated from January 20th of this year or January 21st up until this week. What does the EPA do, or what does this cause Donald Trump and his administration to change how they look at the EPA, or does it?
That is going to be a really interesting development. And it's Rick Snyder, right? Is he still at the EPA?
I don't know who's in charge of the EPA. I didn't.
I thought it was Rick Snyder. Is that his name? The guy, the former
governor of Michigan? No.
No, I'm thinking of. Okay. No, it's the former governor of Texas. What's his name?
No,
Rick
Perry.
Rick
Snyder was the guy from Michigan. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just got confused there for a moment. All the Republican Ricks.
Rick Perry's over at the Department of Energy, ain't he?
Oh, that's right. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm all confused.
Yeah.
But in any event, they're either going to have to change their tune about the EPA or put someone else in charge of this, right? That seems like what he would do. He wouldn't give any, I don't know. It'll be an interesting development, and it should be happening rather quick succession. Like, we should be hearing from them because, like you said, the Superfund sites, but also there's some, I heard some discussion about just the, just fields that have crops in them that have all these chemicals in them for fertilizer, them flooding, and then, you know, joining with all this other flood water is going to cause some toxic problems. So there's all kinds of, it's all kinds of messed up, and it's going to be a huge, huge challenge to clean it up, and years and billions of dollars.
Yeah,
Simon,
you know,
so much industry.
Yeah, you know,
go ahead, Tim.
It just hit me. Catherine, you had the name right. Scott Pruitt. He's that guy that he happens to be a climate change skeptic.
Right.
Was he not from Oklahoma, perhaps?
That sounds right. That sounds like Oklahoma.
And so who knows what he's been doing. I want to say he has been overseeing the downsizing of the EPA into irrelevant.
Right.
So I don't know exactly. Perhaps there's enough career people left there to actually get out and do something. Because if not the EPA, then who?
Who would
be involved in environmental disasters of the type that David was just talking about? I mean, who would do so if not the EPA? Nobody, right?
It'll be interesting to see what happens. It really will, because of the sort of distrust and seemingly irrelevance of the EPA to this administration. And in fairness, not just this administration, but the Republican Party, it'll be interesting to see how they respond to this cleanup in, the fourth largest city in America. I mean, I don't know how they put the EPA in charge at the same time as they, discount their value. It's really going to be an interesting spin, I'm sure. I don't know. Maybe they'll put it all in charge. Maybe they'll put FEMA in charge of all of it.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it's so critical, because moving forward, the water will finally subside. Things will dry out. I mean, there are things that will kind of just naturally fix themselves over the course. But if some of this toxic waste spreads out and goes into the Brazos River, goes down, that's more Surfside and those areas. But then if it goes into Galveston, it could even go down to all their coast. That's some tourism that will get hurt. Some of the land could be cropland. While some of the fertilizers that they've got put on will move, they'll cause some problems. Then, of course, there'll be some toxic material that could go on to some farmland there between Houston and the coast.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And cause that to not become fertile. And this could be a lingering issue, not just one that's, fixed in a matter of months, but has to be, damaged for years and changes the complexion of that area. Because, that's the east side of Texas. That's the really heavily populated part. From Dallas, Houston, Beaumont, down all the way to the coast. That's where a lot of folks live. You have to get further out west past San Antonio until you get to El Paso, where it's very sparsely populated. Well, let's get into the consoler-in-chief, and they say that is one of the duties of a president after a tragedy like this, after a devastating effect. And I saw something on Twitter early in the week, and it showed President Clinton hugging a lady after a natural disaster. Then it showed George W. Bush, same thing. Then it showed Barack Obama, same thing. Then it showed Donald Trump on a truck bed talking to people. And it was just so striking. And I can't say, because I haven't seen, you know, 24/7 footage of him over the past week, but from what I understand, he has not gone and consoled people in any the same way of pretty much any president that we've ever had that went to respond to, you know, incidents like this. And I guess, you know, you've heard he's a big germaphobe, but that's something you've just got to get over in these situations. And it shows how important, in, I guess, in his mind, how he functions is always right, no matter what the circumstances. Tim, did this kind of expose him this week as being lacking in yet one more area of the presidency?
You know, this may surprise you. I don't think he was as bad as he could have been. I think back to that iconic.
Talk about, seriously.
Yeah, well, for Trump, that's a supreme compliment. And I'm also left-handed. So anyway, you think of that iconic photo of Bush flying over Katrina and looking out the window of Air Force One as if he's detached from what's going on there. I got to figure he's at least doing as well or better than Bush did with Katrina. As far as being a person who feels their pain, as both Barack Obama and Bill Clinton were, he's not up to that. He just simply is not up to it. He can't do it because he doesn't feel their pain. And he's one that ain't going to pretend he does, I'm sorry to say. His thing is standing up saying what a great crowd here today and stuff like that, because he really doesn't. He really doesn't get it in a lot of respects. I would like to say I'm proud of him for going down there twice in a week's time. It probably also was politically smart for him and the First Lady to go to a National Prayer Day church service, probably the first one he's ever been to in his life. But so it's not as bad as it could have been. The question is going to be, what are they going to send down there? What is he going to do to get things down there to really get this thing rebuilt? That's going to be the test. That's still to come.
Well, I mean, obviously, what's important, not the optics, of course, in this situation, Bill Clinton's unfair. But, you know, Jeb Bush, I think he was doing what he was told as far as flying over. They had him do things. But, I mean, when he actually met people, he wasn't seemingly afraid to touch them. I did hear this at the Houston Texan Stadium when Donald Trump fed people. They gave him a set of plastic gloves, and he, you know, took the time to comment they didn't fit because his hands are so big. I mean, he's just so into whatever's important to
him. He didn't say
that. He's
that,
just.
Tell me he didn't.
That's
say
what
that.
I saw on Twitter. Maybe it was just.
Oh, my goodness.
It was on Twitter that's, you know. And, well, and of course, he spoke to a crowd, and I think I sent this tweet out to y'all from somebody else that he said that everybody's had a good time talking about his speech. You know, and it's like, hey, you know, I've come here. I mean, it's just, it's so self-focused that, you know, he can't think about the bigger picture. Now, I will say this. Obviously, he's appointed, and we learned this last week from Jeff Singer, a real EPA director, not somebody that judged show horses or whatever that was that Michael Brown did. So he did a better job than W. Bush, and that, a FEMA director. Which director are you? FEMA director. He's appointed somebody real there. Catherine, what have you seen from his hands-on personal response, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I guess I'm, you know, I don't often disagree with Tim, but I'm going to disagree with Tim about this. I thought it was sort of the ultimate show-off for him to go to Houston on Tuesday. It was a distraction for everyone from the work that they had to do. I know he didn't actually go into Houston. He was outside of Houston. But just imagine all the, you know, personnel required to make sure that he had a safe and, you know, a safe visit. And I thought that when I heard he was going, I thought, that's stupid. Why is he going? Why doesn't he just, you know, comment from afar and let them get their work done? And then when he showed up there, he didn't help in any way. He, you know, made these ridiculous speeches about how epic the storm was and how, you know, amazing it was. And without, I kept thinking about this. Y'all remember when they referred to themselves as compassionate Republicans or compassionate conservatives?
Yeah, compassionate conservatives. Yes.
I saw no compassion from that man. The few, you know, little excerpts of video that I saw of him, and then you know the first lady with her stiletto heels and her bright white T-shirt, and just this, it was just sort of a complete disregard for what, for the suffering that was going on in Houston and, you know, surrounding areas. So I mean, I get that, you know, people want the president to show up, but I just didn't think that it was too soon for him to, you know, show up there, I thought. I mean,
I'll say this.
I'm glad. I think that, you know, there is a presence. It's important for the president to, you know, express some concern. But if you're just going to show up and talk about yourself, and then they're talking about politics in Missouri, I mean, I just thought it was very completely lacks compassion or empathy. And
a couple of things here. You're right, Catherine. The problem is not that he showed up. I'm glad. The problem is that he showed up and it was Donald Trump.
Yeah.
there's the problem. He's going to be Donald Trump, unfortunately, everywhere he goes. And the way they were dressed and all when they left the White House was not people that were saying in your face. To me, it was people that simply do not have a clue, which is even worse, because people that would say in your face at least know what they're trying to do. People that don't have a clue when they are the president and the first lady, that could be a slight problem. As far as going or not going, I don't know if there's a winnable scenario. If you go immediately, people say, oh, you're tying up the roads, you're tying up resources, tying up the airports. You need to stay out of the way. And then if they don't go until later, people will say, well, you didn't go soon enough.
If you're going to go early and quick, then you need to be ready. Like, I will say, I have some admiration for Mike Pence, rare as it is, because when he went, he was like helping them, you know, clean out their yards. Well, he was talking to people. He was like working with people. That, I mean, if you're going to go, show up again,
we're talking about a guy who was in Congress for several terms and was the governor of the state of Indiana versus, well, Donald Trump.
Right, exactly.
Ultimately, the problem is
not that he went or he didn't go or he went. The problem is that he is Donald Trump, like you said.
That's what it is to me. What do you think, David?
Well, I think that is the hard decision. If you're going to get criticized either way by some people, but when you go, what do you do? What do you say? He said the wrong things. He didn't do the selfless act. That's why Mike Pence. We're not surprised, but this is what we do. We talk about it after the fact.
Yeah.
This is why Mike Pence is just a superior, more selfless person than Donald Trump.
Well, of course he is.
We may not agree with him on any more policy, and honestly, if we knew about all the ways they feel about all things, we might even disagree with him more. But as far as just being a selfless person and, you know, doing things for others,
I think Mike Pence is much more of the selfless leader we want, the servant leader. You know, not so we want
him,
but I mean, it just shows that that's one of those areas where it would be good if Donald Trump would learn from Mike Pence, although he knows everything and he probably feels Mike Pence is inferior to him in every way. And it's good that we point out the difference in these two men, because we're Democrats and people hear us, oh, they're just going to criticize every Republican. When Catherine goes and points out where Mike Pence is superior to Donald Trump, people can say, hey, they see the differences in these two people, so maybe we should listen to them more.
What have I been saying for months now? That nothing would tickle me more than to be able to say the words President Pence. That would mean that there is no longer a President Trump. Now, I would not agree with about 90% of the policy stands that Mike Pence takes. That's no surprise. But what also would be a pleasant fact to know would be the fact that we would have a guy in the Oval Office who has an idea how government functions, and it would just be better for the country. It would be better for the world. I mean, guys, who would we rather have right now dealing with the situation in Korea, Donald Trump or Mike Pence? Well, give me Mike Pence, but, you know, that's me. It can make a lot of difference.
Yeah. I mean, on Election Day 2018 and Election Day 2020, those would be the only 2 days I might say Donald Trump, just because I think you got a better shot there, but probably not that much difference. But every other day, I agree with you. Well, let's talk about the world. And this is important. This is something that Donald Trump could try to do something about something, is they have talked about how the world's response is not what it was like for Katrina, not what it was like for Sandy and other disasters. The world is given some things. I mean, you know, they still feel for Americans, but they're not as quick to give, not as generous as they have been in past times. And people are saying it's how the world feels about Donald Trump. Now, you can say that's completely unfair to all those poor people in Texas and Louisiana because – good many of them didn't vote for Donald Trump. Good many of them don't agree lock, stock, and barrel, even if they did vote for Donald Trump, and they shouldn't be the ones to suffer. But they are. What kind of warning call is this to people around America that people around the world's view of us has changed so dramatically that this can be tangibly pointed to? What do you think, Catherine?
It's not surprising to me. I think this whole America first and, you know, the climate agreements and the, you know, the international situations are of concern to our international partners. And, I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, it's really like friendship in many ways. Like, if you have a friend who is always supporting you and they need your support, you're going to support them. But if you have a friend who's, you know, like a fair weather friend, I think you're less inclined. It's not that you're not going to help. It's just that maybe you won't show up quite as quickly or quite as stridently as you would if they were a good partner. Does that make sense? Does that analogy make sense? I think that,
yeah,
there's a lot of reticence about Donald Trump. I think people are concerned about, you know, what might happen with North Korea. They're concerned about, you know, how something like this could affect financial markets. So there's just a hesitancy to step in quickly. And it's very sad because, you know, I don't know if we haven't, I mean, I don't pay close enough attention to know if we haven't helped another country in a way that we normally would have in the past 9 months. But I imagine there have been times. So I just think it's I mean, I agree that it's unfortunate that the people of Houston and Texas are, you know, suffering because of that. But, I mean, that's what presidents are supposed to do. They're supposed to keep our, you know, international reputation in good shape so that when we do need help, we get it. I mean, that's, like, part of the job.
Most definitely. Tim, some of your thoughts and how we stand internationally and how it's affected by this tragedy.
Well, again, Catherine mentioned the key phrase here, which is America first, and that's been the president's foreign policy agenda pretty much. And, I mean, we're talking about a man who has insulted everyone from the mayor of London to the prime minister of Australia to the president of Germany. Now, I'm talking about our friends here. I ain't even talking about enemies yet. He keeps mouthing the Chinese. He keeps mouthing the South Koreans. He mouths this one. He mouths that one. And I do not understand what purpose it solves. And so why should anyone right now come and stand with us when we are not standing with them? We have abdicated our leadership role as the leader of the free world. You know, the leaders of Europe have had to assume that mantra. Why should they now stand with us in our hour of need? Why should they? What have we done? What has our president done to invoke that goodwill? Besides nothing.
Well, I mean, that's the problem is he's deteriorated this relationship in less than a year. And I will say this, when the tsunami hit several years ago, people in America had the big telethon or events. They collected, money. They sent over clean water, all these things. And they really probably didn't even know who the world leader of which nation the tsunami hit, any of that. They sent it to people. And hopefully Donald Trump is not so soiled the reputation of America and many of these nations that they're not just going to help Americans. I mean, that's really sad if he's, you know, put it asunder that harshly that people won't even help their fellow world citizens because of, you know, Donald Trump. But, I mean, that may be the case, and that's something that, General Kelly and others that have his ear need to come out and talk to him, although I heard a report this week that Donald Trump berated General Kelly so bad he said he's never been talked to like that to in his entire life as an adult. And it sounded like if there was another incident like that, he would be looking for new employment pretty quick. So it may be that even the people closest to him don't even want to advise him at times because of the way he conducts himself. Well, let's kind of move on from the hurricane. I mean, 38 minutes, a pretty long chunk of the show. But let's talk about this Fox poll. And obviously it was kind of interesting in that it was Fox. But it was really constructed in an interesting way where they ask about all these personality traits. Do you find Donald Trump to be a strong leader, or where do you think he's harming America, his use of Twitter, do you find him trustworthy? All these different traits, and by and large, not every measure, but by and large, he came out on the wrong end, and it was really shocking. Even among Republicans, some of these figures were not in his favor. I sent a little Twitter graphic to y'all that encapsulated it pretty well. Tim, what are some of your thoughts on some of the findings from that Fox poll?
Well, the only positive, the only real positive that I could see here was when 81% of the respondents said he says what he thinks. I think that is the main thing that endears him to his base. I don't know how many people have said that to me. Well, at least with Trump, you don't have to wonder what he's thinking, and he will say what he thinks. what he thinks. He won't do this and that and the other, and he ain't like the rest of them up there. That is a positive for Donald Trump saying what he thinks. Now that's a
big here's the thing
with me, but I ain't voting for him. So.
Well, here's the thing. I would say I'll be in the 81%. I believe he says what he thinks. I just think what he says is garbage, and what he thinks is garbage. That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people can say what they think. I remember a movie with John Candy. His mama would just say whatever she thought, and half of it was racist. And she would say, "I tell it like it is." And she'd say, and one time he stood up to her, he said, "Mama, you don't always have to tell it like it is. Somebody needs to tell Donald Trump, you don't always have to tell it like it is, because whatever you have to say, he's really probably not like it is. But he wants to hear it."
And for extra points, who played his mother in that film?
Zero clue. I couldn't even tell the movie. I just remember that.
Maureen O'Hara. Now let's move on. Anyway. He had one. There was one thing. If I were Donald Trump and his people, I would be troubled about it. And that's where 44% think he is an outsider. That should be much, much, much higher.
Yeah.
Because that was one of his huge selling points. I am the ultimate outsider. Well, now less than half of the respondents' news poll believe that. So that's my the two main things that just jumped right out at me out of this poll.
Yeah. Catherine, what kind of jumped at you about the poll?
Well, I think it's really interesting that 81% think that he says what he thinks, but only 31% think he's knowledgeable.
Touché.
So that's like 50% that think he says what he thinks, but what he says isn't true or isn't from a knowledge base. I think the thing that I would be, if I were him, that I would be concerned about in this, certainly the outsider should be higher, but the fact that people think that 44% think he's unstable. I think that's, I mean, if I was his advisors, I would be like, that's scary that, you know, that many people think that. And that so few people think he's a moral leader, or what is that, 25%? I mean, he's the president. We look to the president to have some kind of moral compass. I mean, I think, at least for me, I think we saw that very strongly with President Obama and First Lady Obama. I think that we saw them as, I mean, many of us, maybe obviously not all, saw him as a moral leader. The rest of this I don't think is, you know, much of a surprise to me, and probably not, you know, that big a deal to him. He doesn't care if people, if anyone but his base thinks he's a strong leader. But I did think that it was funny that people, 81% thought he says what he thinks, but only 31% thought he was knowledgeable.
Hey, and David, I want to take the opposite tact on something. Scary thing to me is that 56% of the people do not think he's unstable.
Well,
I find that scary.
Yeah, and unstable, I mean, there obviously is a lot of interpretations, like, do they mean, you know, should be put in a straitjacket and be hospitalized?
Well,
that's going to be a lower number, but unstable meaning,
dude,
like he has the temperament to fit the Oval
Office. When we look at Donald Trump, we know what unstable means when they're talking about Donald Trump.
Nothing, just doesn't have the temperament to handle the office of president. You know,
that's right.
Where
that's
that comes
correct.
In.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let me get into this. And the reason I keep saying it's the Fox poll, one, they did it. I'm going to give them credit. But two, one thing I find interesting about this, if this was the MSNBC poll or the public policy polling poll that was on the Rachel Maddow show, and it was just folks like us that, you know, read it and listened to it and, you know, analyzed the findings, that'd be one thing. But one would think that Fox News would spend a decent amount of time talking about their own poll. I did not watch Fox News. Honestly, I haven't watched CNN or MSNBC in the last three or four days.
it seems like I'm teaching, watching volleyball games or football games this time of year for my kids. And so I hadn't watched a lot of news in general in the last few days, been reading it. But I would think that Fox would report on it. That means that his hardcore base would be seeing these unflattering numbers. One, do y'all happen to know if this was reported pretty widely on Fox? And two, if it was, do you think this will peel off even just a single-digit number of voters off of his, you know, hardcore Republican base? Catherine, do you happen to know?
No, I don't think it will. Nothing seems
okay,
to
and
move those people.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think
go ahead, Catherine.
I don't think they, like, the first few, like, they like that he says what he thinks. They don't care if he's a bully because,
right,
you know, he's the president. He should be a bully. And they're not going to believe that he's unstable or that he's incompetent. They think he's a strong leader. So the things that they already believe are not going to be swayed by this. You know, this is
right,
because they don't know these people. You know, they don't know who they talk to. I mean, I just don't think that his base is going to be affected by it.
David,
yeah, Tim?
In the heat of a political campaign, say we rock on to 2020, and just say he gets a few things done. Not a lot, but just a few things, less than other presidents, but a few things. I mean, he's got to accidentally get something done. It's like a blind squirrel finding nuts, for crying out loud. But I'm going to guess that right now, out of the nearly 63 million votes he got, he'd lose about a million of them, and the Democrats would gain about a million. 2 million vote swing, that would be enough to beat him, but it wouldn't be enough to cause a tidal wave or something like that. I do not believe that's there yet. I wish it were, because we're having midterms next year, but I'm not confident yet that that is there. Are you?
I think that there you were going to see some, you know, political change. It's just, you know, of course it'll be the old refrain, well, Donald Trump's horrible, awful, everything else, but so is candidate X, you know, or, you know, or we don't trust the Democratic Party, the brand, and this is something we've analyzed before. We need to keep analyzing it. The brand has some flaws in it. And I'm not saying the party, I'm saying the way that it's perceived has flaws in it. And, that's causing folks to feel like they have nowhere to go. They have two bad choices in their mind, and then they pick the one they've been voting for because they say, oh, well, there's other good leaders, not Donald Trump. I mean, some of that may fall out, or they may just get disaffected and stay home. We got plenty of time to study that. But it just seems like you know, Fox reporting these numbers and them finding these numbers would have more impact than another source, because they're more likely to show it. And that's going to be a huge part of the ball game. If they start to not have 100% positive coverage, to me, if you looked at it, between 2006 and percent of positive coverage of the Bush administration was the lowest two-year period of time of the 8 years he served as president. There's obviously a lot more material there.
Okay.
Donald Trump.
Let's say that Fox is staying with the cheerleader in chief of the news networks. Now, they look at the Nielsen ratings and they see that Fox News is the most watched basic cable news service in the country. Why are they going to change? They're not.
You would hope journalistic integrity. But of course, the Democrats profile. If they find out that
both broke out laughing.
Oh, I know. If they find out that, you know, the only people that will buy ads on their place are Metamucil, nursing homes, reverse mortgages, gravestone
companies, then they may just
What those people are going to do is look at the ratings and say, hey, a lot of people are watching them. We have to advertise there. And they're not going to care about their politics or anything they're saying, I don't think.
Well, but
now, because the bottom line
now,
is the bottom
and line. I have heard that they're file and Who Wants to Advertise has started to shrink more and more, and they don't have the top brands by any means. That, you know, if you look at who advertises with them, and that can start to shrink. Well, we got 10 minutes, man. This thing is flying by, and let's try to at least squeeze a third topic in, and I want to talk about the Alabama Senate race. We can talk about the runoff polls, and then let's talk about Doug Jones if we can get time. The runoff, a lot of news happened this past week. I believe Roy Moore picked up two big endorsements. Steve Bannon endorsed him, and Sarah Palin endorsed him. And then poll after poll showed that Roy Moore is winning, some by a pretty big margin. Now, Brock McCleary of Harper Polling, they did a poll that showed it was a much closer race, but really a lot of good numbers and, I guess, support in a Republican race in Alabama for Roy Moore, and not much good news for Luther Strange. Catherine, how do you kind of sum up the week there?
Well, I didn't follow it that closely this week. I was distracted by other things, but it looks like Roy Moore is lining up for a win, which is just shocking to me. So I'm not looking forward to that. And I hope that it puts the Byers donors on the Democratic side to step up a little bit for Doug Jones.
Yeah, Tim, and obviously, Catherine, there were really, honestly, more important stories to follow than the Alabama Senate race. It just happened to hit the Internet a little harder, and that's, of course, where I get more of my news.
Well,
like this, Kim, what do you think?
I groaned when she mentioned the donors to Roy Moore. Well, I mean, to Jones, which we'll get to in a moment. As far as the Republican side of this thing, dude, I think it's just over. You got a known commodity in Roy Moore, and he has a hardcore base. Trump's numbers in Alabama are very strong. The average Trump voter trading Luther Strange for Roy Moore, 6-1, half a dozen of the other. And frankly, the choice of Luther Strange and the way he ascended to that Senate seat in his appointment by Kay Ivey really left a sour taste in the mouth of a lot of people over there. And I think they were just waiting for a chance to get him. And apparently all of the non-Strange vote in the first round of voting in the primary is all going to vote against him. Now, he hasn't really picked up anything. And so I think he's going to be easily beaten.
Yeah, I think he actually – I read also that he picked up the endorsement of that state senator – that it was from downstate Mobile that was the number four place winner, which, you know, I'm not saying that every one of his voters even would vote for him, but it was just more momentum. Hadn't heard how Mo Brooks endorsed, but I know he's one of more anti-Donald Trump politicians than Alabama Republican politics, so you'd have to think he wouldn't support. I don't know how that even fall out. Who knows? But it just – there's no momentum for Luther Strange right now. And he seems like the establishment at a time in which, honestly, almost it seems like neither party, it's a, you know, being the establishment is the good thing to be. So that would get us to a Roy Moore, Doug Jones, you know, party-on-party election. And we read an article, I guess it was in Politico, I sent it to y'all, saying that a lot of activists are just not wanting to line up behind Doug Jones, because if you look at him compared to national Democratic politics,
He's just not liberal enough, just not progressive enough. But then comes the question, do you want a person that's right for their state that can win or at least compete, or do you want somebody that can, you know, look like the National Party across the country? Catherine, did you see that article, and what did you make of the lack of support at this point for Doug Jones?
Before I answer that, I just want to make a correction. Tim, it wasn't Kay Ivey that appointed Luther Strange. It was, what's his name, before Robert Bentley.
Robert Bentley.
Yeah, and I think that's hurting Luther Strange, too, because I think that all looked like a setup, and I think people didn't like that. Anyway, what I read into that article was that perhaps it sounds to me like the sort of idea is that if Roy gets the nomination, if he gets the nomination, then there might be more support forthcoming for Doug Jones because Roy Moore is such a, just a shocking representative of, you know, all sorts of horrible things. So, but I didn't read that, and maybe I just missed it because I was reading it too fast. I didn't think it was because he wasn't liberal enough. I thought it was more that people feel like they're just putting good money after bad. Like they all the support in Montana and in Georgia, and we didn't get there. And Alabama is much more conservative. Well, it has a reputation of being much more conservative, and they just didn't think it was worth the investment. But I hardly think you could call Doug Jones not liberal enough. I mean, he's a pretty good liberal.
Well, I did see where that article's linked from. It talked about how some people are, don't think he's a representative of the National Party. Now, here's the thing. I think you're right. In terms of Alabama or Southern politics, Doug Jones is adequately progressive enough. But, if when Roy Barnes ran in 2010, he probably wouldn't be a good San Francisco candidate, but we know Roy Barnes is quickly progressive enough for Georgia, per se.
You may know that. I do not know that.
Oh,
he supports Republicans.
Okay.
Let's talk about Roy Barnes.
from his term in office, he did a lot of progressive things when he was actually in the office. But I'm just trying to use an example. I could have come up with another one. But it's just trying to fit everything on one. Roy Moore is going to be a candidate that seems like you could raise money against, either run against or if he even wins an office. And Alabama's just such a cheap media market, Birmingham, Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, that you could get a lot more bang for your buck than, say, the 6th District of Georgia, where you bought Atlanta TV and 3/4 of the people didn't even live in the district that saw the ads, probably more than 3/4. It just seems like it would be a better targeted use of money, even if it was a longer shot. Tim, what did you think of that article?
I was shocked to see that he had less than $100,000.
Yeah.
In the account there. And you were right, Catherine. Did I say Kay Ivey? I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You're allowed to make a mistake.
Yeah, because one of the problems with Strange was that when the governor was gone, then all his critics turned their guns on Strange. But anyway, I don't see how Jones could win. I would love to see a competitive race. I know, David, you really like this guy, and he seems like a good guy and a good, solid candidate, but it's almost like Alabama's a lost cause right now.
It's that I like the possibility. If we could have saved some of that money from the Ossoff campaign, $2 million, you could just go so far with it. That's my thought.
Yeah, but even he is wanting, and his supporters are wanting to compare themselves not to Ossoff, but to the situation that happened next door over
yeah.
there in South Carolina, the fly under the radar type of thing, you know, and they think he'll actually do better. I don't know if I agree with this deal of not criticizing Donald Trump. That's not going to excite progressives. That would be sending money in the small donor pool off the internet where he could raise huge amounts of money like Ossoff did. But I don't know what he's going to do coupled with Alabama and no money. I don't see anything good happening.
And I think if you say this is what Donald Trump does wrong or this is what he doesn't do and this is what I'll do different, that's just politics. I mean, that's how
right.
you frame things. You got to, contrast. And there's nothing wrong with that. Now, if all he did, I guess, was criticize things that aren't even policy related and left it at that, and he says, I don't want to be that kind of politician. Well, I understand what he's saying there, but if you then use it to, you know, establish policy differences and style differences, you know, if I went to a tragedy, I would actually get down with people and help them, you know, kind of like we were saying Mike Pence did. So there's some contrast there. Well, been a great show. Hope everybody has a restful and productive Labor Day. But until next week, been the Cuzzy Vine.
Good night, guys.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and united America.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.